Today's Teisho is case 4 in the Blue Rock Collection. Tokusan visits Isan. Engo's introduction. The blue sky, the bright sun. There is no distinguishing east and west. Time and causation. Medicine must be given to the sick. Tell me, is it best to let go or to hold fast? See the following. Main subject. Tokusan came to Isan's temple. Carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm, he crossed the lecture hall from east to west and from west to east. Then, staring around, he said, "Mu, mu," and went out. Tokusan reached the gate, but then said to himself, "I should not be in a hurry." So he dressed formally and entered a second time to have an interview. Isan was sitting in his place. Tokusan, holding up his kneeling cloth, said, "Osho." Isan made as if to take up his hosu. Then Tokusan gave a katsu shout, swung his sleeves, and went out. Tokusan, with his back turned on the lecture hall, put on his straw sandals and went off. In the evening, Isan asked the chief monk, "That new arrival, where is he?" The chief monk said, "When he went out, he turned his back on the lecture hall, put on his sandals, and went away." Isan said, "Someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs." Secho's verse. The first seeing through, the second seeing through, frost on top of snow, great risk of slipping. Like General Hiki, he entered the enemy camp and narrowly escaped. He made a dash for it, but he was not let alone. Alas, he is seated among the weeds on the isolated mountain top. What a beautiful day to do Zazen together. When I got up this morning, it was so beautiful. Everything was so, even at 4:30, the sky was beginning to light up, and the clouds were red, and the sky was just brilliant blue. The temperature was perfect. All the life outside the window, outside the door, just this, the crickets chirping and the cicadas, the katydids making their noise, just deafening noise. All this life out there. And the sun is rising and the darkness is slipping away. So beautiful. And then to, dress and come to sit. This beautiful building, this beautiful Dharma Hall, which people think is a tutoring center, which is really this sacred place. This is really wonderful. And then to practice, following the way all morning. Really, what could be more beautiful than that? What could be more wonderful than that? Yesterday, or this week, we've had quite a bunch of new students. Keiko, Jaru, Kriti, Zhaofeng, Imtiaz have all been involved in distributing pamphlets on Activities Day. And the pamphlets have maybe 180 pamphlets went out. And every evening this week when we've had sitting, we've had maybe 10 people show up. Also, we have all of the new students associated with Professor Yu's Buddhist meditation class. So all of these new students have been coming in and practicing. And it's very interesting to see beginners start along this beautiful path. You know, I'm always amazed at how well people can do. On Wednesday afternoon, we have a sit from 2:50 to 4:10. It's right after the lecture. And there were maybe 23, 24 students in the Yorba Lounge, where we had the sit, which is in Tillett, right across the open space, brother. And, you know, these were people who had never done Zazen before, mostly. And I showed them the basics, and they tried it, and it was very beautiful to see people doing this for the first time, very moving. I have to tell you a little story. It's quite a coincidence. Life is full of strange coincidences. On Wednesday, when I was explaining to everybody how to sit, first I was covering proper posture. And during my explanation of posture, I mentioned that Genki Roshi had always told me to straighten my back for many years. And I said that to the students, and then I asked them to get in the correct posture, and I went around the room inspecting their posture to make sure their backs were straight. And there was one young man whose posture was excellent. And I said, "Oh my goodness, you know, your posture is really great." I said, "Where did you learn to sit like that?" And he said, "Oh, from Genki Roshi." And I thought he was pulling my leg. I thought he was making a joke. But after the sit, I came up, I realized, you know, he was serious. And after the sit, I came up and said, "You studied with Genki Roshi?" He said, "Yes." He had studied with Genki Roshi about 20 years later, after I did. But in the 90s, he studied with Genki Roshi. He was a student primarily of Aikido. And one of Genki Roshi's friends was a Aikido master in Seattle. And Genki would have Zazen, lead Zazen at the dojo. Anyway, quite a karmic coincidence. I hope he comes back. So it was so moving to me to see all of these beginners practicing Zazen. Really touching, really. I mean, you know, one woman came up to me and said that she really loved the sitting, and she said she had gone to a Vipassana sit. She had never done any meditation before and had gone to a Vipassana sit, which is a 10-day sit. And she said she was shocked at how difficult it was, but she didn't quit. And when I heard that, it was like my heart just started beating very fast, you know, because it takes an unusual person to just jump into something like a retreat like that, to just not care, not try to protect yourself, just jump in, be so excited about this, so excited, you just take the risk, you jump in. And then, you know, it's very difficult not to quit, you know, but to hang in there. That's an unusual person. I felt very excited to meet such a person. And I hope she comes back. I hope she practices. I can remember, you know, my first time sitting with a group was at this Seattle Zen Center with the Genki Roshi. And I can't remember exactly what I thought, but somehow when I began to sit with other people, it really made a big difference in my life. It really, I had a friend. I remember going, we used to go to a sesshin, over on Vashon Island, which is across the Puget Sound from Seattle. So we had to take a ferry. There were no bridges, and there still aren't. You have to take a ferry. I drive your car onto the boat, and the boat goes across the water. And we would all go over together in like a caravan to the Sesshin. And I was just beginning to do this, you know. And I was sitting up in the, they had a little restaurant in the ferry where you could have coffee and donuts. And I was sitting there with a woman named Abby Terrace. And we would sit together across from each other sometime in the Zendo. And, you know, we were all both struggling with our posture, trying to sit properly. And basically, I remember Abby saying something to me. She said something like this. She said, you know, I realized when I started doing this practice that I have been hungry for this or thirsty for this all my life. I've been thirsty for this all my life. And now doing this is like drinking cool water or something like that. Finally, I didn't know what it was, but now that I have it, I realize I've wanted this all my life. This is like so delicious, so refreshing. And I myself could not have put it so clearly. I was not very clear-headed, I think. But Abby really had an open heart, and she really understood what it's like to begin this beautiful path. It's like somehow all of our many lives, we've been looking for this. And then it happens, you know, the door opens, and there are many struggles maybe along the way. But such a beautiful path, you know, really beautiful. And, you know, working with people who are just beginning is really wonderful because they don't know much about practice yet. They don't have too many, especially people who haven't read very many books. You know, those are very good students because they don't have a lot of assumptions about things. Not that it's bad to read books, but when I first started practicing, I really didn't know what to expect. And I was just happy to get through each sit without having a heart attack, you know, because it was very difficult for me to sit. So that actually was very good. You know, I didn't have time to pass judgment on anything. I was just really happy to get through a Wednesday night of sits, you know. And these beginners, it's very moving to sit with them because, you know, this is all new for them. There's no judgment, just being in the moment. It's weird or strange to sit on these little cushions. It's kind of strange to cross your legs and breathe through your hara. It's all new and different. Not too much judgment. You know, that spirit is very important. You know, you can lose that if you practice a long time. You can become a sophisticated practitioner of Zen. That's a big problem. The great Soto Roshi, Suzuki Roshi, who founded the San Francisco Zen Center, Suzuki Roshi, wrote a wonderful book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And he really talked about the importance of all your life trying to preserve the beginner's mind. And the spirit of not knowing, of mu shin, just mu, no judgment, you know, very, very important. And these beginners haven't done enough to have judgment yet. A lot of them are just jumping in. So it's very moving, really wonderful to sit with people like that. Before they begin to have opinions, they're just sitting. And this is very advanced practice, really. Yesterday evening, we had quite a large number of students also. Maybe we had 20 people, actually. I don't know how many, maybe more. And it was interesting, there was one young man who was sitting across the aisle, maybe midway down the aisle from the this side. And at the end of the first sit, I asked all the beginners, I said, "How was that? You know, did anything strange happen?" And he said, "My body is vibrating all over." He said, "My body," he said, "feels like it's vibrating all over." And I said, "How does that feel?" He said, "It feels great." But he was a little nervous, you know. And some, you know, just a beginner, see, something could happen because he didn't have any judgment or any opinion. He had this wonderful experience of the flowing of the chi, of the ki, through his body, because his mind had relaxed, the blockages in his body had relaxed, and suddenly this beautiful energy is in free flow through his body. And it was weird. He'd never, I don't think he'd experienced it before. He was a little nervous, and when he asked about it, you know, I explained what it was. And a little later, I was asking for more questions. And I don't remember how the issue came up, but there was another young man down at this end of the aisle who said, I had said, "You should practice with other people because your sits will be better when you practice with others." And he said, "What happens if your practice is better when you're alone?" And I thought that was an interesting question. That was a kind of koan. What happens if your practice is better when you practice alone? And the young man who had had the experience of chi, of ki flowing through his body, said, "Yes, you know, I read the book Siddhartha, and he practiced alone." Basically, that's what he said. So, very interesting koan was presented in the Zendo last night. Tokusan came to Isan's temple carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm. Remember, I've mentioned that in ancient China, during the Tang Dynasty, it was possible for monks and nuns to go to any temple they wanted. Basically, they would travel all over China going to Seshin, doing labor, earning their keep in the fields, and then sitting, and then doing Seshin with great teachers. Carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm, he crossed the lecture hall from east to west, from west to east, then, staring around, said, "Mu, mu," went out. So he comes to the temple, he walks into the Dharma hall, he goes from east to west and west to east, walking around going, "Mu, mu." Then he goes out. He reaches the gate, but then he said to himself, "I should not be in a hurry." So then he goes into the quarters for visiting, traveling monks, and he puts on his robes, his robe, maybe his raksu or his kesa. He dressed formally and entered a second time to have an interview with the roshi, with the sifu. Isan was sitting in his place, sitting on his cushion. Or maybe this is like Dokusan. So Tokusan, holding up his kneeling cloth, if you're in formal robes, there's a little cloth you put on the ground, which you kneel on, said, "Osho," like priest. "Osho." Isan made as if to take up his hosu, his whisk, like a horsehair whisk. Then Tokusan gave a katsu, which is like a formalized shout in Zen practice. Swung his sleeves, which is another formalized gesture, and went out. Tokusan, with his back turned on the lecture hall, put on his straw sandals and went off. So he comes in the Zendo the first time. He walks around looking and going, moo, moo. Then he goes to the gate and thinks, well, not so fast. He comes back a second time, and he sits in front of the Roshi, and he says, Osho, priest, or monk. Isan made as if to take up his whisk. And then Tokusan says, Katsu! And wham. So in the evening, Isan's still sitting there, right? In the evening, Isan asked the chief monk, that new arrival, where is he? The chief monk said, when he went out, he turned his back on the lecture hall, put on his sandals, and went away. Isan said, someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs. Now, in the Blue Rock collection, Engo has done the introduction, but the monk Secho has done the poems afterwards. So one person has written the introductions and one person has written the poem. And Secho likes to make little comments. He writes little comments in the margins that are in the Blue Rock collection. So when it says Isan, someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs. Secho wrote in the margin, frost on top of snow. Frost on top of snow. What could that mean? You know, there are people who can practice by themselves. There are people who can practice by themselves, you know. Very rare for such people to exist. Generally speaking, most of us don't have the self-discipline to practice well on our own. If you sit at your home, you may have wonderful sits after a while, but if you've been practicing for 6 or 7 or 8 years, you may have really wonderful sits. But probably in the first 6 to 10 years of your practice, you sit more deeply when you sit with other people. I can remember myself, when I first started sitting at home, it was just very hard for me to get through half an hour. I would look at my watch, 5 minutes had gone by. Look at my watch, 7 minutes had gone by. Look at my watch, 8 minutes had gone by. When I would go to the Seattle Zen Center to sit, I would just be able to forget about time, and half an hour seemed like a long time sometimes. Sometimes it seemed like eternity, but it wasn't so hard to get through. In my own practice, when I started out, I would sit once in a while on the weeknights with the Zen Center, and then I would do other things. And I started going to Sesshin, so I was sitting maybe once a week and going to Sesshin, and I wasn't really getting anywhere in my practice. It was only when I started sitting more regularly that I began to make practice. And I wasn't a particularly disciplined person, so it was very important for me to practice with other people. I began to associate with people who would go to the Zen Center in the morning. One of them was my old friend John Sunston, who was a neuroanatomist at the university. And he would come down from northern Seattle in his Volkswagen bus and pick up all the Zen students on his way, all the We didn't have cars, a lot of us, we were graduate students. So he'd pick up all the carless graduate students and take us down to the Zen Center in southern Seattle. And we had a little club, you know, really. One of us didn't show up, we'd say, well, where's Bill? Or where's Susan? And it was hard to get up so early in the morning. You know, it was like 4 a.m. we had to get up. But you didn't want to let everybody else down, so, you know, you'd get up. And it was a good system, because basically I was a rather lazy person. So I usually had to get up and come down and sit. And we would sit for an hour and a half in the freezing cold, because Genki Roshi liked it cold. And then we would have rice, miso soup, some vegetables, and a pickle. And then we'd go to our jobs, our work. It was very good. You know, I began to make real progress. Sometimes I'd be sitting on the cushion thinking, especially on a, we didn't have sitting on Sunday, but I remember every Saturday morning I'd be sitting on the cushion thinking, if I have to do one more minute of zazen, I'm going to scream. Right? And that's very good practice. You know, that's about right. Yeah. So I would just sit there thinking, one more minute, I'm going to scream. And of course, it would go by and I wouldn't scream, you know. But that's good. That's just about enough zazen, see. And so, you know, then when I would go to sesshin, things would really begin to happen for me. Could really get into deep concentration. You know, it's not always possible to sit like that in the early morning with others. But sitting together is really a wonderful opportunity to help each other wake up. Very, very important. And yet there are people who do manage. You know, I have occasionally heard of, though I have never met, people who have had like spontaneous Kensho experiences. People who have in like everyday life had Kensho, had a significant Kensho experience. There are, I guess, such people. I remember reading years ago about a woman, an American woman, who had had this amazing experience after a period of great personal suffering and turbulence. And she went to Yasutani Roshi, and he said, yes, that's Kensho. So some people do have that. Also, even the history of Buddhism is filled with solitary practitioners. There were in China, and probably still are, people who live up in the mountains and live in caves and other places and practice alone by themselves. Even Xu Yun practiced, we would say, alone by himself for many years. He lived in a hut. The hut is still around. It was it's still around where he lived and practiced. So there's this tradition, even in Buddhism, of solitary practice, practicing by yourself. What if your practice is better by yourself? And apparently these monks and nuns find their practice to be better by themselves, by themselves. But, interesting question, you know, Secho says, by yourself, frost on snow. Well, frost on snow, is frost on snow, great risk of slipping, great risk of slipping. Something dangerous. Beware of frost on snow. See, that's what he's saying. Watch out for frost on snow. In the Buddha's time, there were also people who had had solitary enlightenment experiences, people who practiced by themselves and who woke up. And some of those people, account the Buddha's encounters with some such people are sometimes recorded in the Pali Sutras. But in Buddhist tradition, there's a great deal of suspicion, actually, or caution about people who have wakened up on their own. This is very interesting, I think. You know, there are people who have had spontaneous kensho experiences, and they live unknown in the world, practicing, and we don't even know who they are. These people are, not part of maybe human history in a certain way. And you could say, well, what's wrong with that? You know, that's perfect, isn't it? You know, practice Zazen, free yourself from suffering, enter deep samadhi, enter shunyata, enter mushin, enter ushin, and then be free, like a dragon in the sky forever and ever, ever and ever. You know, nobody knows your name, nobody knows your accomplishment. How wonderful, real freedom. You know, it's like I resign from the human race. I resign from this crazy world. This is a powerful motive sometimes in practice. You know, I myself really deeply wanted to resign from the human race and really deeply wanted to resign from this world. It just seemed like such a crazy and terrible place. When I was in graduate school, I was tortured almost every day by graduate school. Maybe your experience is different. But something went wrong almost every day for me. And I was easily the dumbest person I knew in graduate school, or I thought I was. I was always going into these classrooms where people would be reading Derrida and Heidegger. And I was still trying to figure out what Shakespeare meant when this sort of thing. And very much nervous all the time, very frightened all the time. And, typical people, you know, if you're young and you don't have a lot of money or knowledge, you often get yourself into unhappy situations. So you think, oh, I want to be on the mountaintop. I want to be out of this mess, out of this mess. You know, this is so tempting. Just to be free from it all. It's all just crap, all the human crap. 9/11, somebody blows up innocent people. You know, if you walk down the street, somebody might punch you in the face. This can happen all the time. All these stupid rules, these problems we have, these stupid problems, our stupid jobs, on and on. Oh, please, put me on the mountaintop. Put me on the mountaintop. You know, how wonderful. And, really, Tokusan is that kind of a guy, right? You know, he comes into Isan's temple, and he looks around, he goes, moo, 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 blows it away with moo. This is just another illusion. This temple is just another illusion. And then he starts walking away, and he goes, well, not so fast. And he puts on his robes, and he goes to see the master. Right? He goes, Osho! And Nisan lifts his whisk like, hello, yes? And he says, oh, Katsu! And then he's gone. Very dramatic. It's like you Roshis, you're all full of crap. You Zen, this is Zen. You guys put on your robes, you get up at 4:30, You sit, you do your stupid koans, you know. I can see through it all. It's all crap, you know. And I'm beyond that now, you know, you idiots. And gone. And he's, you know, so, you know, Isan doesn't do anything. He's just, he sits there. And basically at the end of the day, he's not even, you know, at the end of the day, he calls his attendant and said, you know, that guy who came to see me and shouted katsu in my face, very rudely, he doesn't say that because he doesn't care. But he says, whatever happened to that guy? And the attendant said, oh, he, you know, put on his straw sandals and he walked away from this place back into freedom. Back to his mountaintop. And, you know, Isan said, oh, one day that guy will build a hermitage up in the mountains and he'll scold the Buddhas and the patriarchs. Now, you know, that's the part of the koan. What does this mean? He's going to build, so he'll build a lofty hermitage, a place, an isolated mountaintop, and establish a hermitage. You'll scold the Buddhas to be bigger than the Buddhas and the patriarchs. So free. See, not even the Buddhas and the patriarchs will be, you know, of consequence to him on his isolated mountaintop. Wouldn't it be nice, you know, to be finally that free? But this is a koan. You know, what's wrong with tokusan? What's wrong with this practice? See, when you see somebody, when you practice Zen, it makes your heart more tender. Even if you don't, you know, you have kind of a stony heart. When I started doing Zen practice, I think I had a very closed up heart because I was so frightened by everything. But basically, if you do Zen long enough, you know, you have an open heart. And when you see people you care about, you know, your heart is full of happy, real joy. You know, real joy. How are you? It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see you. It's wonderful to see you. Why would you live on that mountaintop? Why would you? You come to Isan's temple. Don't you want to meet Isan? Don't you want to meet Isan? That's why we came here. We came here to meet Isan. We came here to meet John, Jaru, Jaufa, Intias, Kriti, Yen, Gary. I came here to meet Al, Yvette, Mark. That's why we came here, Gary. We came here to meet. Okay, that's so wonderful. How wonderful to come to Isan's temple. This world is Isan's temple. Oh, how long did it take to become human? How many lives to be here in this world, and then to practice together? How many lives did it take? It's wonderful to see you. It's wonderful to see you. It's wonderful to see you. Don't you want to go to Isan's temple? See, don't you want to go to Isan's temple? See Jaro, see Kriti, see Mar. Don't you want to go? So beautiful. So beautiful. But maybe Tokusan's heart is still too closed. Still too closed up, you know. He doesn't understand. He thinks this is about, he thinks the freedom of Zen is freedom from this crazy world, you know. But he doesn't understand this crazy world is your true self. When I meet you, I meet my true self. I meet my true mother, my true brother, my true self. Brother, mother, those are too far away. It's like a revelation of my true self. Meeting you is my true self. Oh, I want to go to Isan's temple. I've worked so hard to come here. I've worked so hard to come here. I'm so happy to be here with you in this beautiful world. Someday, that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs. Someday. What a shame. What a shame. When you do Zazen, I've been sitting next to Jaru and John this morning, and I look and their posture is so good, their sitting is so good. It makes me want to sit better, a little straighter. And, I look at John, whose posture is so good, and his sitting is so excellent. And I have no idea really what's going on in his head. I think he's doing deep zazen, but he could be thinking about lunch. That's because we never know. You know, finally, you are really and truly alone on the cushion. No, you know, you go into Dokusan and you present your heart, you share your heart with your teacher. But nobody really knows your experience of this moment but you. And really, Zen practice is about that freedom. You know, really and truly, people can guide you on the path, but no one can have Kensho for you. Your Kensho is your Kensho. Your sitting is your sitting. It's yours, in a real sense, you're totally alone on the cushion. Totally alone. Nobody can look into your heart and tell you what this moment is like. No. And it's interesting, you know, the deeper you go into your practice, in a certain sense, more alone. I know a Zen student who had his first Kensho experience working with the Koan Mu. And he went in to see his two teachers, they were Genki Roshi and Webb Sensei, Kangan Sensei. After his Kensho, his teacher said, "Well, how does it feel?" And he said, "Alone. I feel like I'm alone." So, yes, you know, in a certain sense, always alone in Zen practice. This is actually very good, very important. This is why you should never discuss your koans with other people, except with your teacher. You know, this is between you and your teacher, and really just between you and your true self, between you and the real master, yourself. Whether you spend 20 years on a koan or 10 minutes on a koan, it's between you and your true self. Nobody can say what's right and wrong except your own true self. And your true self is really and truly your true self. So when we sit, you know, we really do sit alone, always alone. But, you know, the wonderful thing is that the deeper we go into ourselves, the more the self opens up, you know, the more the self opens up, self disappears. Dogen Zenji said, to practice the way is to know the self. To know the self is to lose the self. So, you know, we practice Zazen, when you enter deep samadhi of shunyata, self disappears, and everything, heaven and earth, self and world, body and mind all disappear. But then an amazing thing happens. You go deep, 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 deep into shunyata, into mushin. Amazing thing happens. Suddenly you're in the world again. Suddenly you're in the world again. Very interesting. Suddenly you meet your true self. Interesting. Wonderful. Inside yourself is this whole, inside you is John. Inside you is Jaro. Inside you is Gary. Inside you is Yen. This is really true. This is really true. So you could say we practice alone. We are alone together. Alone together. Very important. Always alone, always together. The blue sky, the bright sun, there is no distinguishing east and west. Ao zu, ao zo, ao zo, ao zo. Lan qiang, lan qiang. Blue sky, bright sun. There's no distinguishing east and west. Yes? Where we talk about time, we talk about causation, but those are just medicines for the sick. Tell me, is it best to let go or to hold fast? See the following. Tokusan came to Isan's temple. He comes in, mo, mo, he leaves, he comes. Why does he come back? Why did he go to the temple? Why did he go? Why did you come here to this place? Why did you come here anyway? Here to meet me. You came here to meet Sandy. You came here to meet Brian. You came here to meet Keiko, Mark, Jiaofeng, MTS, PT. You came here to meet your true self. Isn't that beautiful? Wonderful, wonderful. Secho's verse, the first seeing through, the second seeing through. Frost on top of snow, great risk of slipping. Like General Hiki, Tokusan entered the enemy camp. He narrowly escaped. He made a dash for it, but was not let alone. He couldn't break free, see? Couldn't break free. Couldn't break free. Alas, well, there's a famous koan that was created by an unconventional Zen master. And it goes like this. It says, why can the man of Zen not cut the red thread between his legs? And that many people who are given this koan think this must be about sexuality. In other words, why is it that the man of Zen still has sexual desire, or the woman of Zen still has sexual desire. Remember, a koan always has a hook. It always fakes you out. There's always a misunderstanding that it encourages you to reach. The man of Zen's, woman of Zen's red thread is, sexuality may be part of it, but it's really just how wonderful to meet you. How wonderful to meet you. How wonderful to be here with you. See, that you cut that red thread and you dishonor all the Buddhas and all the patriarchs. These are the Buddhas. And Hakuin Zenji said, outside of humans, there are no Buddhas. You came here to be you. You came here to be me. You came here to be human. You want to meet the Buddha? Look next to you in the Zendo. Look next to you in the Zendo. That's the Buddha. There is no other Buddha. So, if you're really clever and you avoid all suffering and entanglements and you live on the mountaintop, you've made a big mistake. Big mistake. Like General Heike, you entered the enemy camp and you narrowly escaped, but you weren't left let alone. Alas, see, he says, alas, Tokusan came to see Isan and he didn't meet him. They should have had tea. They should have had tea. They should have played mahjong all afternoon together. They should have gone for a walk. They should have done zazen. Alas, he is seated among the weeds on the isolated mountaintop. What a shame. What a crime. This world is not, you know, one way to think about this world is that it's filth. And when we do zazen, we purify ourselves and escape from all the crap. And so this world is like mud or filth, and the flower of enlightenment grows out of the filth. But that's exactly wrong, 100% wrong. See, this world comes out of Mushin. This world, with the 9/11, pink slips, cancer, divorce, miscarriage, failing grades. This world is the flower. It's so wonderful to be here with you.